Welcome to the show. Hundreds of people have reached out to me asking about the Corporate Transparency Act and its beneficial ownership information reporting requirement. So you can decide if you want to continue watching this video. Let me share the spoiler that the Corporate Transparency Act does not address corporations created in any of the states of the union. If you want to see that for yourself, keep watching.
The Dr. Reality Vodcast with Dave Champion.
Let's start with this. If the Corporate Transparency Act was operative in the states of the union, it would mean everyone who has created a corporate entity would be required to file a beneficial ownership information report disclosing who owns or controls the entity to FinCEN, which is the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network within the U.S. Treasury Department. A lot of Americans don't believe filing that kind of information with the federal government is something they want to do or should be required to do, but they're concerned about the financial penalties and possible jail time for noncompliance. If your entity was created in a state of the union, you can relax because the Corporate Transparency Act does not apply to you. Let's go through the facts together. But before we jump in, I want to let you know that I'm currently running the big Christmas special on my books. Between now and midnight on December 24th, everything on the website is 10% off, including the four-pack that contains Income Tax Shattering the Myths, Body Science, the Business Guide to Payroll Withholding, and the Business Handbook for W-9 and 1099. But it's not just 10% off. If your purchase contains Income Tax Shattering the Myths and or Body Science, I will personally inscribe and autograph your copy of each. For now, I'll just say that Income Tax Shattering the Myths is the best-selling book in the country that tells the American people the truth that Congress has never imposed the income tax on ordinary, hardworking Americans like you. It is the best-selling book on the subject because it contains mountains of incontrovertible evidence. In fact, even the federal government, which has admitted it possesses Income Tax Shattering the Myths, has never disputed a single item of evidence in the book. How could they? 100% of the evidence comes directly from the government. The gentleman whose comment you see on screen was one of the first people in the country to purchase Income Tax Shattering the Myths when it was released almost 15 years ago. And as you can see, his comment reads, "My 15th year of ditching the scam and living in financial freedom is coming up this coming year." I share Corey's comment to make the point that if you become educated, you too can safely walk away from the income tax scam. For 10% off anything on the site and Income Tax Shattering the Myths and Body Science personally inscribed and autographed, go to drreality.news, drreality.news, and get a great Christmas present for yourself or the truth seekers in your life. Use the coupon code XMAS24. I'll give you more information on each of the items at the end of the video. Now back to the Corporate Transparency Act, which from this point forward I'll be referring to as the CTA. Virtually every law the average American sees as government overreach isn't really government overreach. It's actually the unwillingness of the American people to learn anything about the law, so the government relies on your ignorance. Should the government be taking advantage of your ignorance to accomplish things it couldn't accomplish if you were informed? Well, no, of course not. On the other hand, the government has been using this same deceptive ploy for nearly a century, in certainly hundreds of statutes, perhaps thousands, yet in the nearly 100 years the government has been pulling this deception, the American people have shown no interest in getting informed about it. Thomas Jefferson said, "If a nation expects to be ignorant and free, it expects what never was and never will be." I've been telling the American people about the kinds of things we'll be discussing today for 30 years, and nothing changes. The government rolls out the same deceptive ploy it's been using to fool the public for almost 100 years, and the American people fall for it hook, line, and sinker every single time. The CTA is merely the latest example. In Income Tax Shattering the Myths, I show readers many of the deceptive mechanisms the government uses in legislation to mislead uninformed Americans into thinking a piece of legislation means one thing when, in fact, it means something else entirely. Today, we're going to focus solely on the method the government uses in the CTA, which also happens to be the government's primary go-to ploy when it wants Americans to wrongly believe a law applies to them. Let's begin by going up to the 35,000 foot level and looking at the only two forms of jurisdiction granted to Congress by the states of the Union in the U.S. Constitution. One is subject matter jurisdiction. The other is territorial jurisdiction. Subject matter jurisdiction consists of the enumerated authorities the states of the Union granted the federal government in the U.S. Constitution. These are matters the states decided are better addressed by one national government than by the states acting independently. Just a quick reminder, every authority not granted to Congress has been retained by the states and the citizens of the states. Examples of authorities the states agreed would be better addressed by the national government are coining money, levying taxes, and prosecuting people for treason. The federal government is not constrained by geography when exercising subject matter jurisdiction. As an example, a person can be arrested for treason in any of the Union states because Congress's authority regarding treason operates throughout the nation. Just to be clear, Congress can only exercise, in the states of the Union, subject matter authorities enumerated in the Constitution. The second form of jurisdiction, known as territorial jurisdiction, is what the name implies. It is geographically constrained. Congress's territorial authority is limited to Washington, D.C. and U.S. territories and possessions. Its territorial jurisdiction does not extend into the states of the Union. According to the U.S. Supreme Court, when exercising territorial jurisdiction, Congress is not limited by the enumerated authorities in the Constitution. Distinguishing which jurisdiction Congress is exercising with any particular piece of legislation is incredibly important because the U.S. Supreme Court has said that when legislating for the states of the Union, Congress is constrained by the Constitution, but when legislating for D.C., the possessions and the territories, the Constitution is largely irrelevant. Returning to my earlier observation over the last 30 years, 99% of my fellow citizens have expressed zero interest in knowing the distinction between Congress's subject matter jurisdiction and its territorial jurisdiction. Having chosen to remain ignorant, it never occurs to the public that virtually everything they see as unconstitutional overreach is really Congress legislating under its territorial jurisdiction and then using the kind of deceptive ploy we'll see in just a moment. So tell me, where in the U.S. Constitution did the states grant Congress the authority to compel citizens of the states of the Union to divulge information to the federal government about corporations created within the states of the Union? That would be nowhere, because the states did not grant Congress that authority. So then, if Congress has only two types of jurisdiction, subject matter and territorial, and the states did not grant Congress authority to compel citizens of the Union to divulge information about corporations created within the states of the Union, then which jurisdiction do you think Congress was exercising when it created the CTA? Clearly, Congress was legislating under its territorial jurisdiction. If, for a moment, we set aside the dispositive fact that the states did not grant Congress that subject matter authority, so the act must be territorial, is there anything in the act itself that verifies its territorial nature? Well, yes, there are several verifications in the act, but today we're just going to focus on the deceptive ploy Congress has been using for almost 100 years. And that ploy is how Congress defines the word state. I recently put out a video showing, among other things, that Congress used this same deceptive practice in the Social Security Act, which has zero applicability in the states of the Union. If you find that statement preposterous, watch the video and you'll discover it's 100% factual. I'll put the link down in the notes. So, what is the definition of state in the CTA? What you're seeing is the definition directly from the CTA, which reads, "The term state means any state of the United States, the District of Columbia, the Commonwealth of Puerto Rico, the Commonwealth of the Northern Mariana Islands, American Samoa, Guam, the United States Virgin Islands, and any other Commonwealth territory or possession of the United States." Some folks might be thinking the words state of the United States means the states of the Union, but that's not how statutory definitions work. Before I break down what state of the United States means, let me show you how Congress defines state when it intends the meaning to include the states of the Union. One example is found in Title 26 of the United States Code, Section 6103B5A, and reads, "The term state means any of the 50 states, the District of Columbia, the Commonwealth of Puerto Rico, the Virgin Islands, Guam, American Samoa, and the Commonwealth of Northern Mariana Islands." In other words, when Congress means the definition to include the states of the Union, the language it uses is the 50 states. This has been the way Congress identified the states of the Union and its definitions for 100 years, except, of course, the number was less than 50 in the years before there were 50 states. In the phrase, state of the United States, the word of means belonging to. So, if we insert belonging to in place of, the phrase reads this way, any state belonging to the United States. If you were awake during your junior high civics class, you know that the states of the Union do not belong to the federal government, but in fact, the states of the Union existed before there was a United States, and after the Revolutionary War, the independent states came together and created the United States. So, what are these states that belong to the United States? That would be Washington, D.C., the territories and possessions. Let's go to Title 48 of the United States Code entitled Territories and Insular Possessions and have a look at Section 731, which reads, the provisions of this chapter shall apply to the island of Puerto Rico and the adjacent islands belonging to the United States. Clear enough? Legislative draftsmen also attempt to fool the public by using the phrase the several states in definitions of state in legislation enacted under Congress's territorial jurisdiction. Whether a definition says a state of the United States or the several states, those phrases mean D.C., the territories, and possessions. Also, don't be fooled because the phrase state of the United States is followed by a list of the states of the United States, such as Puerto Rico, Guam, American Samoa, etc. Imagine Congress was defining items used in baseball, and the definition read like this. As used in this chapter, the term equipment means all equipment used in baseball, home plate, bases, bats, bat weights, catcher's mask, catcher's chest protection, leg guards, knee protectors, catcher's glove, field gloves, batter's gloves, cleats, batter's helmet, and baseballs. The fact that the definition began with a broad phrase, all equipment used in baseball, followed by an enumeration of those items, does not expand the meaning beyond the enumerated items. The same is true in the CTA. Beginning the definition of state with the broad descriptor, states of the United States, followed by an enumeration of those federal places doesn't expand the meaning beyond D.C., the territories and possessions. In March 2024, in a case entitled National Small Business United v. Yellen, and without the definition of state being raised as an issue, with plaintiffs and defendant both arguing that the act was intended to operate in the states of the Union, a federal judge in Alabama declared the act unconstitutional, stating that the act, quote, exceeds the Constitution's limits on the legislative branch and lacks a sufficient nexus to any enumerated powers. However, since neither party raised the issue that Congress passed the act under its territorial jurisdiction, the court did not rule on that. Phrased another way, plaintiff's counsel never bothered to look at the definition of state, and the defendant, who was the federal government, sure as hell wasn't going to illuminate the government's 100-year deceptive tactic by pointing to the definition of state and arguing that the act was merely territorial in nature. Unfortunately, the manner in which the case was filed resulted in the court limiting its ruling to the 65,000 members of the association that brought the suit rather than the entire nation. Having covered that the act is territorial in nature, let's move on to where the act says the requirement to file a beneficial owner information report does not apply to domestic corporations. In the act's definition section, number 11 describes what is and is not a reporting company. In other words, which companies are required to file a beneficial owner information report and which are not. Subsection B is a list of entities that are not included in the definition of reporting company. The list of non-included entities is long and complex. It literally goes on for pages. Near the very end of that lengthy, highly detailed list, we find this. Any corporation, limited liability company, or other similar entity that is not owned directly or indirectly by a foreign person. Not owned by a foreign person. What does that mean? It means owned by Americans. And in short, entities owned by people like me and you are not a reporting company. Before I move on, please take a moment to subscribe to the channel and hit the like button so the algorithms will show this truth to more people. Also, if you think all 334 million Americans should know this type of information, please share it. How do you think our fellow citizens are going to wake up about this kind of thing unless you put the information out there? I can't do it without you. I can't do it alone. Even with state defined as DC, the territories and possessions, the governments of the states of the union usually jump on board in order to get federal money, which is the case here. Under the CTA, the federal government will give money to the states that send out CTA paperwork each year when entities are renewed and the annual franchise fee is paid. You can bet your bottom dollar that the information sent to you by your state Secretary of State's office will employ vague language, encouraging you to submit a beneficial owner information report. Nothing in the state's information will tell you the CTA has no applicability within a state of the union. The only specific thing will be the part about the act's civil and criminal penalties for those who don't file a BOI report. I'll go out on a limb and predict that after receiving the state's propaganda, 99% of those who receive it will immediately file a BOI report out of fear. If you'd care to read the CTA regulations promulgated by the Secretary of the Treasury, they can be found in Title 31 of the Code of Federal Regulations, Subtitle B, Chapter 10, which pertains to crimes such as money laundering. While Congress certainly has the prerogative to enact money laundering laws, nowhere in the Constitution is it granted authority to conscript ordinary citizens of the states of the Union into filing reports with the Treasury Department to support Congress's anti-money laundering efforts. If you would like to purchase a letter you can send to the U.S. Treasury Department should they contact you about a BOI report, email me at dave@drreality.news. The letter isn't free, but it's also not expensive. It might be something you want to keep on hand. Let me close by giving you a short overview of the Business Guide to Payroll Withholding, the Business Handbook for W-9 and 1099, and Body Science, all of which are 10% off when you use the coupon code XMAS24. The Business Guide to Payroll Withholding is 13 pages and was written to help people who know the truth about the income tax communicate what the law really says concerning payroll withholding to the company for which they work. Why would we need to tell a company what payroll withholding law says? They should already know, right? I've been in this space for more than 30 years, and over that time, I've spoken with hundreds of payroll department employees, managers of outside payroll companies like ADP, HR directors, CFOs, and company attorneys. As shocking as this may sound, in 30 years, I've never met anyone in any of those positions who had read what payroll withholding law says. In other words, every single one of them simply did what someone else told them to do without bothering to see what the law said. That's why people who know the truth have to find a tactful yet compelling way to let the business know what the law really says. The Business Withholding Guide was written to accomplish that. Spoiler alert! The law does not authorize or permit private sector companies in the states of the union to withhold from their workers' pay. Period. Full stop. While the Business Guide to Payroll Withholding was written for the purpose just discussed, it is a fantastic tutorial for anyone who wants or needs to know what the law really says. It has a section that explains why accountants and attorneys always get the law wrong and contains a list of questions a business owner can ask the company's accountant or attorney to test whether they know the law or are just regurgitating falsehoods they were taught previously. What about the Business Handbook for W-9 and 1099? All the things I just said about the withholding guide, they are equally true for someone doing work for a company as a contractor rather than an employee. A company demands a Form W-9, which has a very specific meaning in law, and then becomes angry or threatening when someone who knows the law says, "That form isn't for me. Knowing what the form means in law, I'd be committing perjury to sign it." Accordingly, the person working as a contractor has the same need to present what the law really says clearly and concisely in a way the company can understand. And just like the withholding guide, the W-9 1099 handbook is a fantastic tutorial for anyone who wants or needs to know what the law really says about forms W-9 and 1099. What about body science? Body science is my groundbreaking work in health and human physiology. I'm sure you've heard of eating styles such as keto and carnivore, which puts a person's body into a state called ketosis. But I'm guessing not one in 10,000 Americans know what ketosis actually is, what it does, and how it does it. Names such as keto or carnivore may be seen by some as fad diets, but ketosis is a physiological state that dramatically alters how your body operates. It is that physiological state, which is defined by science, not by any fad, that is why you've heard so many amazing testimonials from friends and associates about keto or carnivore. Body science lays out the science of these two competing physiological states, which are ketosis and glucosis. The body only operates in one or the other. There is no third, so understanding the science is pretty damn important. Body science lays out the science in a way everyone can understand. Body science does not promote any particular style of eating. It's a science book just written in a way everyone can understand. Once you understand the science of these two competing physiological states, you can make the decision you think is best. I should add that I practice what I preach. I haven't filed an income tax return or paid a penny of income tax in 31 years, and I live by the science you'll discover in body science. At 65 years old, I'm as healthy as I was at 18. Between now and December 24th, use the coupon code XMAS24, and you not only get 10% off, but I'll personally inscribe and autograph your copies of each book. So go to drreality.news, drreality.news, and pick up any or all of the items we've discussed. The 4-pack, which contains all of them, is deeply discounted and already the best deal on the site. But if you use the coupon code XMAS24, you get an additional 10% off. And I will personally inscribe and autograph your copy of Income Tax Shattering the Myths and or Body Science. Also, purchasing any of my writings helps me to continue to be here for you with these revealing and thought-provoking presentations. Thank you for sharing your time with me today. Take care.